started to shout, to throw contains of water, and like 15 to 20 contains fell on me. I felt them, felt on my head, on my, they fell on my body, on around me. I barely could move my hand, but I was able to reach one of the contains and to drink a little water, and then I sat there and I was staring at the lights in a big confusion. I didn't know where I am, and I was disconnected from reality. But then I started to hear the voice of the officer from over the fence, asking me, "Hey, a child, what is your name? What is your name? Come, we'll take you home. Don't worry." And then I started to pull myself toward the fence, and he was encouraging me, "Pull yourself. Don't worry. We'll take you home. Don't stop. Don't stop." And then, till I was able to hold the fence and shake the fan, and then I started to come to reality. I was listening to the radio, Rutavor, all the commands over the radio, and then they started to cut the fans. They didn't have the appropriate equipment on their jeeps, but they started with their weapon. They were able to cut the fans and to pull me through three different kind of fans into the to the Air Force base. The paramedic was taking care of me and was basically helping me with looking where I have blood on my body and taking care of it. And then they start to investigate me. We were on the jeep, whereas we were like 10 jeeps driving along the fan, and I realized that it was very, very long way. I couldn't imagine myself running through such a long way. But anyways, they started to investigate me, and I couldn't really respond well. And the officer told them, "Don't worry, leaving him along. He's okay. He speak Hebrew, and that's okay. We'll investigate him afterward. He's not in a condition." Okay, so I was not in a condition, and then I fainted, probably. And when I woke up, I was on a stretch on the ground with an IV in my hand. I couldn't see the jeeps or officers or soldiers. I was by the gate of the Air Force base. I saw only one soldier, probably the guardian, that taking the all the papers from a car that entering to the Air Force base, and giving him a permission to enter. And then when he saw me moving on the stretch, it was on the ground, far from the road, then he came to me and he asked me if everything is okay. It was before, still dark, before sunrise, and it was in the middle of the desert, and I was very cold. I was shaking in the stretch, and I told him, "It's very cold in here." He told me, "Well, I have a blanket, but it's very dirty blanket. We put the blanket on the ground here. There is no floor, so we put it on the sand. And I don't know how long it's here. Probably a few months." And he started to shake the blanket, so all the dust will leave it. Well, just and then he put the blanket on me, and I, with all the thickness and the ugliness, I was on the stretch for Till sunrise, till the morning, and then I was able to wake up. But leave that story that I told you now as a child, and just go back now to my story as an officer that was commanding the mission in Gaza Strip and getting a reward from the Air Force, from the from the Air Force, flying with my commander, F-16 pilot, in the back seat of a combat airplane, landing in the Air Force base emergency landing, and realizing that here, down there, by this fan, I was here already. It was like almost 8 years before. I now recall at once, because the red helmet on my head remind me the red helmet of a combat air pilot from my childhood that woke me up right here, down there. And I realize that I'm getting a present or reward from the Air Force for the mission that I've done in Gaza Strip, but I actually got already my life as a present right here, down here in the fence. And I was very impressed how they were able to pull me from up north from the army. I was the only one that was removed from Golani, and I was removed not to any other place in the army or any other place in the military, but to the Air Force, and specifically to that Air Force base. There is many, and no, I'm the only one that commanded the mission in Gaza, getting now the reward on a place where down there I got already my life. I realize that the Ashgacha are giving me signs, because I smell the smoke. I felt that I don't have oxygen to breathe. I felt that, like, if I'm burning life, like somebody is symbolizing life to me, I'm burning a very, very precious time. And the red helmet is like, red helmet, think. Al Rosh HaGanav Boer HaKova, we say in Hebrew. You have a red helmet. Think, it's burning. You got to understand the Ashgoche, that you're not here for no purpose. It's there is life have a meaning. It's like if the universe are, just giving me signs that I'm getting now a present from the Air Force, but I got my life right here, down there, from God. We were able to land. The land was not perfect, but because it was very hot and very in there in the cockpit, and we didn't have an oxygen, and we smelled burning rubber, very, very, I would say, very strong smell of a rubber burning. But we were able finally to land, and I didn't want to get no more a present from the Air Force. I felt like I got my life again back to me, and I don't want to leave the mother ground, and that's okay. I prefer to have 2 feet on the ground rather than a neshama or a soul in heaven. I don't love present, okay, and as somebody that hate present will leave. That's what I figured to myself. I don't want the present of the Air Force, but it was not my decision to make. They took me from a very strong mechanic, took me, and he pulled me to a new airplane, and it was against my will. I didn't want to get the present of the Air Force, but all of a sudden the present become a command, and I had to fly again on a better airplane, on another new airplane that we a combat airplane, and we flew over Gaza again. I'm not telling you that story. I'm realizing that actually the Ashgacha was giving me many, many, many signs. For example, when I was in the middle of the desert and I shouted Shema Yisrael, it took exactly 20 minutes. As I, 15 minutes, 20 minutes after the Shema Yisrael, to wake up and to see the light beams. Not of, I wasn't in a near-death experience. No, I never felt near-death experience. It was the light beam of the jeeps of Tzahal in the middle of the desert. I was saved. I was all day and all the night in the desert. And only when I shouted Shema Yisrael, that's where a miracle took place. And I realized that I was, by the way, when I realized that, when I was at the age of 23 and a half, it's actually I was not keeping Torah mitzvot. I was not even interested in those Indians and their clothing. I mean, I'm talking about the Haredim and their clothing. It seems to me like if they're Indians, I don't know why they're wearing such a black clothing and what they're doing. But anyways, and I was not even keeping kosher back then. But I realized that there is a power up above that actually were here. He heard me, and somebody reminded me the event many, many years after, and I realized that it's out of statistic because it's impossible. It's very, very, very tough to be accepted to the Air Force. It was 50 other officers that came and through the interview to the Air Force base, and 12 was accepted. I was one of them. And only one from those 12 got the mission in Gaza Strip. So I realized that it's out of statistic that one, which is me, that commanded in Gaza, will have such a miracle over the fans of the Air Force, reminding him that he got his life right here underneath. Usually while I was running, doing a journey with my soldier, I chose a place, the place where the fans were caught and where the soldiers entered me to the Air Force base. And that's where I used to tell my soldiers to give them a break and to pull out their weight from their back and to give them a break to drink some water, and usually even putting a sweet in their mouth so they're going to wake up and, in the middle of the night while they're making 45 kilometer journey or 35 kilometer journey. I used to choose that place as a break because I had a mercy on them, realizing that I have to have mercy on others at that place where the soldiers had a mercy on me and gave me water. And I always was asking myself whether it's a coincidence that I'm here or it's an ashgacha that I'm here. But actually, it was like a winkel, like turning on and off. No, it's possible that way, it's possible that way. I'm questioning myself whether it's impossible otherwise. But I realize that it's, if you really think about it, that it's out of statistic. When I recruit from the service, and I serve a long service in the military and then in the Air Force as a soldier, as an officer. My mother already got married. She got married with a businessman in Tel Aviv that have many restaurants there. He was a very rich person. But he was a widow, and my mother was a widow, and they got married. Now we become a very complex family. I had two other sisters, step sisters, and a step brother that was about to get married with a Australian Gentile, very far away from keeping Torah mitzvot. And all of a sudden something happened, and his father, my stepfather, father, died. And then when he was sitting Shiva on his father, and he was listening to his friends, what they have to say about his own father, which he didn't keep in touch for many, many years, then he realized that his father was a very righteous person and well appreciated. And then he accepted on himself one thing for the first year, to say once, at least once a day, Kaddish on his father. So he started to say Kaddish on his father. And he started to be a little more religious and to keep a little more. And he heard a lecture from Rabbi Shimshon Pinkus, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, in Ofakim, in his Kehillah, in Kiviti Hashem. And he got a little more closer, and he started to keep Shabbat. And in the beginning, it was a big fight between my stepfather and my mother, that didn't want to, that have a hard feeling toward God, because my father died at a very young age, and she was she become a very, very secular person, didn't want to keep not Shabbat, no Kiddush. But then with her husband, then she started to keep a little more afterward. And the Rabbanit Pinkus also used to come and to visit my mother, and she started to encourage her to put a cover on her head while she's turning on the Shabbat candles, and slowly and surely the family become very, very observant, very religious, and even his son, that was about to get married with a Gentile woman, he was able to convince him that it's a wrong way, and he started to make a tshuva. And he made a tshuva, and then he got married in a shidduch with a very religious, very orthodox woman. And now he lives in Tzfat. He has 7 kids, orthodox family, Haredic family, and he was able. My stepfather was able to convince his two sisters to make a tshuva, and they made a tshuva. I was the only one in the house that was an officer, very proud of myself, coming to visit my mother and the family. And during Friday night, all my friends used to beep me to leave the dinner in Yom Shishi at Yom Shishi at night, to go to a pubs or a bars with them. We're all officers and friends from the army or air force. And so my stepfather told me, look, it's Shabbat. If you're not sitting with us, don't come no more. I didn't get married with you. I got married with your mother. And you're a very adult person. Live your life. Go on. Don't destroy what I built here. I made a tshuva with the family. You're very far away from religion, from faith. So live your life. And so I didn't come no more house to the house. Didn't come more to visit my mother, and I become much more anti, because, and even in Yom Kippur I didn't keep no more. Even Shabbat I didn't want to think about no kosher and other mitzvot, because I had a hard feeling with my my stepfather, we didn't get along together. When I finished to serve in the military, I told my mother that I'm leaving to the States, and then I landed in New York, and basically that's where my little story started. I'm gonna make it a little more shorter so you can understand what I'm talking about. I came to New York, the year was 89, and I become very, very secular Israeli, that thinking about money, business, nothing was important to me. I wasn't sure that there is a definition to life. I lost it. While I was drinking beer, I thought to myself, there is only beer, and you can drown into the beer and at least enjoy the moment. No more. There is no other things. People are talking a lot. Who says that there is a definition to life? I was not even sure. But always something was... I was remembering what I've went through in the Air Force, and I was remembering the event of what happened to me, and that was a contradiction to all my theology back then, and it created a conflict inside me. I was saying that there is no definition to life because it was very comfortable for me. I could feel free. It was a necessity to feel free and to have no definition to life, because then you can do whatever you want. But something else was in the back of my mind that contradict all what I wanted to believe. And it was what happened to me in the military. I realized that there is an Ashgaha, and I'm actually lying to myself. And I was living the contradiction back and forth. Didn't know what to decide. And I told myself, okay, you know what? Maybe there is definition to life. But an infinitive definition. Maybe there is a supreme power up there. Okay. But I'm too Jew. I'm too Jew. If I'm going to start with my journey, I'm going to end it up in Israel, dancing Moshe Emet v'Torato Emet. But actually, it's something I was born in such an environment that maybe in my subconscious, I so absorbed it that I probably cannot release it, even if I'll find the truth somewhere else. Or maybe that's what my subconscious will guide me back to Judaism. And it's a sold case. If I would have been Christian, and I would have been raised in a Christian environment, so maybe, who knows, but maybe, if I was a secular Christian, and I was going on a journey for 10 years around the world, searching for the truth, I'm pretty sure that my subconscious will guide me back to Georgia to tell my mother, hey, I found the truth. I found Yeshu. Chas v'chalila. So I was not sure whether I'm able to overcome reality, and I really have a freedom of choice. So I first of all thought to myself, okay, let's first avoid all or reject what I got, and then cross all the borders, and then maybe after being objective and not having an emotion toward Shabbat, Chalot, Kiddush, then I might be objective, and I will maybe then be able to really think clear and find the truth. But I went very far, and I got married. And I got married with a Dutch woman, Catholic Christian, was married for 7.5 years. And unfortunately, it led me to have a business in, you know, Armani, Versace, fashion. And then I went on. I was able to purchase an airplane, Cessna 172. And then I become a flight instructor in Florida with 6 different kind of licenses. And I realized that I was drowning and drowning into the materialistic world, and the Western civilization was able to cause me to forget the search of the spirit. And I think that one day I woke up realizing that I have no Shabbat and no Kippur and no Kosher, and I'm celebrating Thanksgiving and Halloween and Christmas, realizing that I'm married with a Gentile woman, realizing that I was lying to my family, realizing that I was not telling the truth to my mother and to my brothers and sisters that didn't know that I got married at all, realizing that I was not alone, but actually there was many, many other Israelis that was going through the same process, lying to their own families. And I basically was able to realize a national tragedy, because I was after converting to Christianity at the age of 30, realizing that I become very anti-Semitic, because I become a believer of a book, a New Testament, which is, let's face it and let's say it clear, it's an anti-Semitic book. And you become a believer of an anti-Semitic book, then you reject all your inheritance and your connection, and you become hungry and mad with your people and with the Jewish nation, and you start to think bad things about them. And unfortunately, that's my story, but it's not only a personal story. It's a national tragedy, because the assimilation, it's probably the most hurting thing, I'd say, hurting our national survival, and basically. Nowadays, if you think about it, then there is a lot of people since the Second World War, since 1946 till now, which is almost 70 years, that assimilated to not necessarily because they believe in Christianity, but because of the materialistic life. And because they fell in love or went through many, you know, being disconnected with their own identity and or appreciating the Jewish identity, they become very open-minded to another culture, and they went through an assimilation process just like me. I even remember that one day I was in Main Street in Queens, and I went to Naomi Pizza. I don't know if it exists no more, but probably I was told that it exists. But when I went there, it was like in 1992, and I heard a shout from behind me, "A paramedic, paramedic!" And I turned. I was a paramedic in Unit 51 in Golani. When I turned to my back, and I saw a friend that used to serve with me in 51 Unit, and he hugged me. I couldn't recall his name, So I called him by his, you know, by his pakal, what he was used to hold. He used to be with a Tommy gun. So I told him, so we hugged each other, and he told me, "What are you doing here?" And I told him, "What do you mean? I live here." And he told me that he lived here as well, and we gave one another the phone numbers, and then we started to meet one another, and he was with a Gentile woman, I was with a Gentile woman, and basically when he got married, then many of my friends from 51 unit, section 3, we came to the marriage, and none of them were came with a Jewish woman. Unfortunately, I'd say almost what, like, if the unit is 30 soldiers, and half of it, like 18 people, came to the wedding, and none of, maybe a little less, 15 or maybe 14, I don't really recall, but they were all married with Gentiles. So, and I realized that we as soldiers, we have a fight in Israel over land with the Arabs. Hamas in the south, Hezbollah up north. But none of us die in the combat in Lebanon or in Hamas in Gaza. We were able to survive it, but the problem was that there is another fight, not over a land. It's over the spirit, over the soul. It's a cultural fight that we were never trained for it. Nobody really gave us the tools how to be able to overcome and to fight such a combat. We are in the middle of a cultural fight. If we were not gonna hold to our own identity, then we're gonna lose it. We basically gonna be defeated by our enemies, despite the fact that the military will be able to win all our enemies around, all the Arab countries that we are surrounded with. The problem is that whom, the question will be, who defeated the war? Who are we? If we're gonna lose our own identity, then we are not exactly Jewish people. We're not exactly Jewish people that defeated the war, and we are maybe Druzim, Cherkessim, maybe Russian, Gentile Russian, and maybe Hever Amim. Maybe we are many nations that came here, but not necessarily kept our own Jewish identity, and we can maybe take our luggages and search for a Jewish nation somewhere else. We have another fight, and that's what the Torah says. The Torah, when we open the Torah, the story of the Torah, then we can see that in Rebekah's stomach was a fight between Jacob, not Jacob and Ishmael, but Jacob and Esau. Who is Esau? By the way, all the Mekubalim have a consensus about it. Esau, it's Edom, the Edomite Edom. It's basically Christianity. That's what Don Yitzchak Abarbanel says in his book, Yeshuot Mashiach. That's what Aramban says. That's many other Rishonim. From our sources, Jewish sources, we know that the Edomite are basically Christian. Christian countries, Christian culture. That's the Edomite. Im tagbia kanesher, ben kochavim simkinecha, misham moridchanu, Hashem says the scripture in Ovadia. Meaning, if you're gonna climb as an eagle, then and you're gonna put your place between the stars. From there, I will take you down, say, God said, God says. And basically, the ego, it's represent the Edomite, represent Italia, represent Germany, represent America. That's the ego, Edomite. And we got to understand that we have a fight, culture fight, not only materialistic fight, culture fight, but also the heart of that culture, which is basically Christianity. It's Isa that looking for spirituality, and Jacob. And it's not only a secular world, it's also a spiritual world. Isa, his head was buried in Me'arat HaMachpelah. He was searching also for spirituality. So the fight is, it's not between a secular life and a Jewish life. No, no, no. It's between Oved Avodah Zarah and Jewish life also. And that's from the dawn of history, a fight between Jacob and Esau, and it will go on, till the dawn of Vayavek Ishimo Adalot Hashachar. Who was struggling? Who was Jacob struggling with? It's the angel of Esau, till the sunrise of the redemption in the end of human history. There is a war that crossing through entire history between Jacob and Esau. That's why we say in the prayer, Ve'alu Moshe'im mehar Tzion lishpot et ar Esav, to judge Esau mountain. Then, Vayita la'Hashem amlucha, then God will become a king. We don't say, Ve'alu Moshe'im mehar Tzion lishpot et Mecca. We don't say, Ve'alu Moshe'im mehar Tzion lishpot at Ishmael. We say, Ve'alu Moshe'im mehar Tzion lishpot et ar Esav. Isa, meaning not exactly the same culture that we live among in America, in Europe. Basically, it's the fight over the spirit, over the soul, over the soul of the nation. That's exactly why the Gemara says in Perek Chelek in Sanhedrin that the Messiah is sitting at the gate of Rome. Why is it? Well, Peripol represent the church. He had an argument with a Ramban. It was 800 years ago. And Peripol was a Jew converted to Christianity, basically. He was representing Christianity in the theological argument with a Ramban. And a Ramban had to protect, but very carefully, not to insult, to protect the Jewish community. And when he was asked why the Messiah is sitting at the gate of Rome, he told Peripol, because you are basically to destroy it. That's what he told him. Why the Messiah is sitting at the gate of Rome? To destroy it, not to destroy the Rome city. It's just a represent basically Christianity, represent the Vatican, represent the culture of Christianity, because there is a big fight. There is many souls that the nation, the Jewish nation, lost during human history, especially to Christianity, especially to the Western civilization. Not many converted to Islam, but most of them through assimilation, maybe one or two generations after, became a Christian and got married in a church. And despite the fact that their inclination, first inclination, first intention, or first desire was not the religion, but the second and third generation, we ought to admit, become Christian. So the bottom line important. The bottom line is, then that's what the Gemara says in Masechet Brachot. The Gemara says, if somebody will tell you that Rome and Jerusalem being destroyed, don't believe it. If someone will tell you that Rome and Jerusalem are built, do not believe him. Because it's Le'om mi'le'om yamatz ve'rav ya'avod tzair. When Rome is climbing up, Jerusalem are going down. When Jerusalem is climbing up, then Rome are going down. It's a fight, it's a cultural fight between the darkness and the lightness. And we're supposed to be a light to the nations, to show them they believe in the real God of Israel, that have no human body, no flesh, didn't manifest himself in the flesh, just the way the paganic religion believe around the world. And then it doesn't really matter whether it's Christianity or Buddhism or any other religion, they all believe in a human God. We don't. That's what we represent. We represent the message of the real God of Israel. And basically, I realize that many Israelis that served for 3 years and even 4 or 5 years in the military, and they think, okay, they've done. They donated their share to the nation of Israel. But actually, they have children. They have different identity. They lost their identity in Netherlands, in Europe, in many other countries, in America. And they don't even come to serve in the military afterward. And even their children are disconnected from the Jewish identity because they got married with the Gentiles. And then the question is, what exactly is the real war about? Because they can donate 5 to 6 years, but then 3 years in the military, thinking that the fight, big fight, is with the Arabs over the land, not realizing that it's over the spirit, over the identity, over assimilation, and over being a Jew and donating his and dedicating his life and his other generations' life to the destiny and destination and purpose of the Jewish nation, instead of just donating 3 years or 4 years and then living to find another place to live, another culture to be part of. I was one of them. I was one of those people. And like I told you, I converted to Christianity at the age of 30. But that's not the end of my story. Nowadays, I'm a rabbi. I used to live to study in Jerusalem for 14 years. In a koilel in Harnof. Study Torah to become a rabbi, and then another 5 years I was studying to become a dayan. I didn't end the studying, and I didn't become yet a dayan, but I was in the process of studying to become a dayan. Back to my identity. I sold my airplane. I gave up the dreams of being accepted to NASA and having dreams to maybe one day be part of a big research in NASA or space or whatever. I left my life in America. I got divorced and I came back to Israel. But it was years after. My story is going on and on. I will go on with my story before entering to theological issues, like I told you, like I promised you. But I think that for this radio program, we're going to do a break here and go on with the story. Just remember where we stopped. We stopped where I basically, at the age of 30, converted to Christianity and then started to go to a church with my wife, to a church to pray. And again, I will tell you exactly what Zashgacha have made. Why am I here, and why am I here with seven kids studying in a Talmudet Torah? I'm married with a now in Jerusalem with an Orthodox, really very righteous Jewish woman, and living my life according to the halacha as a Jewish life. The Ashgacha turned me in many ways to recognize that I've made the biggest mistake ever. That I betrayed my nation. I betrayed Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, David, Shlomo, the entire nation of Israel, the fathers of Israel, and the Torah, and God. And I was searching water in the wrong places. Actually, I'm just going to add one thing. My sister got married here in Israel. My only sister from my own father and mother. Because I have only one sister from my own father. And she got married with a priest that converted to Judaism. And he was born in 1964. And I was born in 1964. And actually, he was born in October, and I was born in October. And he was searching just like me. He left Mexico. He started to search. He was studying religion around the world. And he came to a conclusion that Judaism is the right religion. Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu and Rabbi Avraham Shapira converted him. Haredic conversion. He became a Haredic, and he became a lecturer in Arachim movement, in the seminars. And I can just tell you one thing. We have done the opposite thing. Two souls was born at the same year and the same month, one of them in Mexico and the other one here in Israel. And basically, we have done the opposite thing. I converted to Christianity. He converted Judaism. I was trying to preach the gospel, and I become a missionary in Florida, unfortunately. And he become a rabbi, trying to reach out for Judaism. And something will take place. Something will happen between us that will guide me back. Will guide me back to see the truth in Judaism. And I will tell you about it in our next radio program. I thank you for listening for that radio program in Galei Yerushalayim. I just want to remind you, my name is Daniel Assol. I'm delivering the program from Jerusalem. It's morning at my time. It's Motzi Shabbos, your time. And Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll go on with our radio program next week. And your Motzi Shabbos. Have a good night or good morning. We'll meet again next week. Thank you very much. And have a nice night.